Ladies and gentlemen, pay attention. This is your boy, the coach from the WWE. I would like to welcome you to the very first wrestling podcast in the world to take you on a weekly deep dive into classic matches along with legends of the squared circle. Enjoy the discussion. Enjoy the back and forth. There's so much to get into. Ladies and gentlemen, this is The Payoff.
Jeff, it's an Elimination Chamber edition of The Payoff. How the hell are you doing, my co-host?
A Survivor Series Elimination Chamber edition of The Payoff.
And it is a damn good thing that this match was on this show because, wow, was this a doozy of a card otherwise.
You and I, like, for starters, my friend, I'm doing great. I'm excited. We are, you know, in that Survivor Series season, kind of, you know, just moving through it all. And that's all right. That's always good stuff. This is one I feel like it's probably the lesser of the big four. There's just so much potential, but we'll talk about that, I'm sure. But I'm doing good. And I'm excited. We got some firsts here. We got some mystery participants, like you said. But once we get into that card breakdown, that's just, it does break down. There's really no other way to put it. So, but this should be an exciting one to talk about. No, either way though. Absolutely. So how are you doing? I never ask you how you're doing.
You know, never ever ask me how I'm doing. I'm fantastic.
Right. Friday. You know, we're recording on a Friday.
We're recording this on Friday afternoon. Weather is good. It's finally not 120 degrees where I live. So that's nice. Yeah, man. All is good in the world right now. Nice little way to end the week, and got a little iced coffee here, a little cold brew. life is good, and we're talking wrestling. I love talking wrestling.
Absolutely,
I say this a lot, but this is what keeps me loving the business is us doing this podcast. Otherwise, if all I had was current product, I'd probably stop.
Hey, we've been going for a solid 15 months now. It feels like, you know, it has not been that long because the world's been shut down for half of that. But
when I post the episodes, that's how I categorize them. So I'm the one that the post the episodes. So I have them all categorized. And so this is number 66. And so every time I'm posting, I'm like, holy shit, we've been at this for a while, man, which is really cool. We're taking holiday again, as you like to say this year.
I did say holiday.
We'll take a few weeks off around the holidays, but otherwise it's every week throughout the year, every Monday, and we're having a blast, man. And it's just crazy because, you know, you and I text about it, but it's just, you come across these matches, like we're obviously done with the October kind of Halloween, but there was that Halloween Havoc match. We'll cover it next year, but that I text you about recently, and it's just, there's so many fun matches still to cover. You forget about this stuff. So it's cool. So I guess obviously Survivor Series, but why'd you want to cover this one?
Yeah, and you bring up a good point because, like, we did last year, we took a little bit more time off during the Thanksgiving and kind of Christmas, New Year's. But this year, we're blowing right through. Like, we're doing, you know, we got episodes, you know, all the way up through Christmas at this point because there was just there's so many good matches to cover. And so this was one kind of looking at Survivor Series and what was out there. I actually think that, you know, there was some better matches in regards to the quality of wrestling. But this was one when I was kind of looking at it, is like, wait a minute, like, I didn't even think I remembered that the first Elimination Chamber took place. Like, and this is it, and it's something we haven't said yet on the show. This is the first Elimination Chamber, so we're going to talk about how it came to be and, you know, kind of, you know, the inception of this. But you know, it's interesting because too, on this card, and you'll go through it, we didn't have a Survivor Series match. All we had this Elimination Chamber match. We had some other kind of crazy stipulations and things like that, but it's just weird to me. I think that the combination of having a Survivor Series that doesn't have literally the match stipulation of the name of the show on it is just weird to me. But then we get this in place of it, which I'm kind of interested, you know, like we said, as we kind of read through some of this, I think you're going to get a kick, and I think everybody's going to get a kick out of some of the reviews after, and what what our favorite experts had to say on some of this stuff. So I got a lot of reasons for this one. I'm excited to kind of watch it and see what happens. So how about you?
I I'll get more into it, but this is a bittersweet moment because this is the infamous match where Shawn Michaels wore the ugliest tights in the history of professional wrestling. That's what I remember about this match. But nah, this is a good one. I'm a big mark for the Elimination Chamber. I 1 year at the Fan Fest or whatever they call it at WrestleMania, they had it. They probably do it every year. You know, hopefully we'll get to check it out. If we can go to WrestleMania and if they have a Fan Fest or whenever that happens, but
whatever it is, yeah,
it's cool walking into this thing. So that's, I love it. So I got some cool pictures and it was pretty neat. So, awesome. We got a lot to cover. So let's get right into the build.
Oh, it's time for the build.
All right. We're at one of my favorite venues. Your favorite venues as well.
It has to be. I know.
Madison Square Garden, November 17th, 2002. So this is my freshman year of college. I would assume
same
that,
here. Yep.
Yeah, I would assume that I found a bar to watch this at. I know B-Dubs had a lot of pay-per-views. I'm guessing I probably walked up and watched this one live. I'm almost positive. I tried to get up there for some of the bigger pay-per-views. That's the beauty of like a pure college town is it was one of those things where it was like, oh yeah, come and watch the pay-per-view, but you have to spend $7 on food. Like, okay.
Yeah, and that was when Buffalo Wild Wings used to do it all the time.
Yeah, and it wasn't like it was, oh yeah, you know, you have to, it's $50 minimum or something like that. It was like,
right, yeah.
I went up there, I ordered some chicken fingers and I sat there for 4 hours and drank water and watched wrestling and it was great.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
So so Survivor Series 2002, Madison Square Garden, November 17th, 2002, jam-packed house, 18,000 attendance. I said this earlier, I was doing my prep for the show and I'm like, what else was on this card? I don't remember anything. Oh, well, there's a reason why. Because it all sucked.
Yeah.
The reason they didn't do Survivor Series matches is because they didn't have anybody to do them with. So we kick off with the Dudleys and Jeff Hardy defeating 3-Minute Warning and Rico in an elimination tables match. Went 14 minutes. You know, given how bad this card sucked, it was probably a smart way to start the show. Get some tables, get a good brawl. I'm sure there were some good spots in the match. So, okay, we're off to a fast start. Billy Kidman defeated Jamie Noble for the Cruiserweight Championship in 7 minutes. Okay.
Sure.
Then we get Victoria defeating Trish Stratus for the Women's Championship. So that's now your second title change.
Hardcore match. Don't forget that.
In a hardcore Women's Championship match. Then, I just don't understand this.
No.
Big Show defeats Brock Lesnar, who's your champion, in 4 minutes. I know it was screwy. I know they were trying to get the title off of Lesnar to get it back on him, but man, Big Show, not good. Not good. You know, Big Show won the title a different year in a 3-way Survivor Series. So I don't know what it is about the Big Show in the Survivor Series, but he always has a good showing.
I think Vince just loves him. Like, I think that's what all it boils down to.
He's a big bastard, pal.
Yep.
Then in our, I was going to say semi-main event. It's the second last match. Los Guerreros, which is Chavo and Eddie, they would defeat Edge and Rey Mysterio, who were your tag champions, and then Benoit and Angle in a triple threat elimination tag team championship match. So some decent star power there. I trust that it was a decent match, but we're here for one reason. We're here for the first ever Elimination Chamber. The world championship is on the line. It's Triple H is your champion, Chris Jericho, Kane, Booker T, RVD, and Shawn Michaels. So I think I can say with confidence that all six guys in this match are Hall of Famers, which is pretty cool. I mean, this was a loaded match, and we'll obviously get to it. And this is a long match, so we're not gonna spend too much time screwing around because this is a long one. But we got a lot to talk about. So, as I said, the house was packed, 15,000 paid, a gate of over 1.2 million. The challenge is that MSG is such an expensive place to host a show that there's a lot of times where they really avoid running it for that reason. Apparently it's a lot more expensive when you involve TV. So sometimes they'll do house shows there on the holidays, but they don't broadcast Raw from there all the time. But they, you know, they've done it recently, but not a whole lot. So that's it, Jeff. Build wise, you know, I know these 6-man matches, there's always, you know, a whole bunch of moving pieces, but walk us through what happened and then we'll jump right into the match.
So yeah, this one, this was actually, like I said, this 2002 event, it was actually the second time where there was no Survivor Series matches. I actually had to go back and kind of look and see the previous year where this happened. It was actually 1998.
Tournament.
And that was the title tournament. Exactly. And so kind of looking at, and this was, for those of you that don't remember, these were matches that were like 2 minutes long, 3 minutes long. It was all night long. The Rock beat the Big Boss Man in like 10 seconds. Like it was just really weird. But yeah, so we had the tournament that night. And so Elimination Chamber, its inception came from, you know, said it was Eric Bischoff, because at this point he was kind of back as after WCW, like he was kind of running general manager and kind of doing all that. And so he kind of introduced this match and how they're going to do it. And it really is, you look at it, it's the combination of Hell in a Cell, a little bit of Royal Rumble thrown in there, it's Survivor Series as well. It's a little bit of War Games, and then just a basic steel cage. And so you kind of throw all that in the kind of hopper, and this is what comes out. And so have this match, but it was at the time, this was the first one. And now we all know that we have the Elimination Chamber pay-per-view. But at this time, like, this was new and there was a lot of build, and we kind of get right into the match. But for those of you that might be watching it, like, there was a promo beforehand with Bischoff kind of, you know, walking through it and explaining it a little bit, which was, I say interesting, but it was just different at the time. So it kind of made it cool. And then everybody did their entrances, kind of getting in the pods and things like that. And so it'll just be interesting to kind of see, you know, what they do here, because neither Tom or I have watched this match yet. And so to kind of see how it plays out. But like we said, you had Triple H, Rob Van Dam, Booker T, Kane, Chris Jericho, and Shawn Michaels this one. And this was for the World Heavyweight Championship. It really was just, at the time, you had Undisputed Champion Brock Lesnar. There was, kayfabe, like, contract disputes. So you actually had Triple H getting what, you know, affectionately, whatever you want to call it, like, you know, as we remember from WCW, the big gold belt, and had it, you know, with just the, you know, it doesn't, you know, not the WWF designs as we're kind of used to and things like that. And it really, at this point, like, him having the belt and just kind of, you know, there was some disputes over that and using it, and, you know, don't need to get into any of that, but it really was just these guys having a bunch of different matches through September and October that led to this event. And kind of, but all these guys were kind of involved in each other's storyline. So you had Rob Van Dam as the number one contender. He beat Chris Jericho, Jeff Hardy, and the Big Show. So so you got Chris Jericho in that one. The next one, you've got Rob Van Dam losing the Intercontinental Championship to Chris Jericho. Triple H interfered. So you got people involved in that one. You get through the Unforgiven pay-per-view of that year. It was actually Van Damme and Triple H for the World Heavyweight Championship. Again, you know, that one, Triple H retaining. So then it was that same night you had Kane, who actually won the Intercontinental Championship from Jericho. So more people getting involved. You had interference from Triple H. And at the time, Ric Flair was aligned with Triple H. And so you had the interference from them. So again, you just had that. So then with that, it was actually No Mercy the following pay-per-view. So you got Vengeance. Unforgiven, No Mercy, and then there was both Kane and Triple H having matches. It's just a lot of different kind of back and forth and things. Like, you had Kane actually defending the World Tag Team titles at that point. It was a tables and ladders and chair match. You know, just all these guys kind of playing into each other and kind of what they were doing. And so, but it was the October 21st episode of Raw. Bischoff announced that the match was going to be Elimination Chamber and it would be taking place in the Survivor Series. And what he wanted to do, because at the time you had SmackDown, it was Hell in a Cell. This was, had the separate brands and they were kind of feuding, which, you know, good or bad, take it for what it is. He wanted something that was better than Hell in a Cell. And so that was kind of the approach that they were taking with this and kind of doing that. And so, interesting, though, how Michaels got involved in this one, just the kind of little side piece. He was not very involved with this because he wasn't around. He was playing up the kind of storyline angle of it was actually they had a street fight at SummerSlam that kind of, quote, put him out. And so that's how it played out. But then when Triple H and Kane had a casket match, for those who remember, it's kind of cool just to watch it. Shawn Michaels popped out of the casket, attacked, gave the Sweet Chin Music to Triple H. Kane, closed the lid on him, got the win on that one. And so because of his interference in that one, got the opportunity to be in the Elimination Chamber. So Michaels was the kind of, I say, the last person to be announced for this one. But again, from a storyline sense, it made sense where you had all these guys that kind of have their individual things. The storylines were overlapping a little bit. The Michaels and Triple H stuff especially makes sense because that build, you take that build itself, you're building all the way from SummerSlam till now. And so that's kind of a respectable build at that point in 2002. And so, and that's it. Just a lot of feuding storylines, pushing a little bit more. Michaels was came back with the hot pop at this one because he had been gone for a while. So it makes sense, why people reacted and kind of excited to see him. And so just a lot of play here, but leads to us to some good stuff.
Love it.
Yeah.
I love when there's just a lot of moving pieces and there's storylines and it makes sense. And again, six Hall of Famers without question. So it's great. Yeah. And Bischoff was really good in that GM role. So it definitely made sense too. And for him to create a competing structure, which I love. So yeah, man, let's get into it. You ready?
I'm ready. Let's do it.
All right. So Survivor Series 2002, it's the main event. We're at the 2 hour and 2 minute mark. Again, Survivor Series 2002, 2 hour, 2 minute mark. Are you ready, Jeff?
I'm ready.
All right. It's time for the payoff.
Ho! It's time for the payoff.
All right. We're here. Triple H, your world champion, handing over the title to Earl Hebner. Him and RVD are starting off in the ring.
Yep. You got everybody in the pods. They have not shown Michael's pants yet for you, as we alluded to at the beginning here.
Well, the worst part is he had the stuff he wears over them coming to the ring. That looked fine. Remember, this is the first time that he wrestled in tights. He came back at SummerSlam and he wrestled in those jeans. So he has these tights made. And there's two issues. Number one is the colors are terrible. Number two is he had to wear knee pads because his knees weren't great. So he has these knee pads over top that look absolutely absurd. So if you remember, he never wore tights again. He wore the big ones so he could wear the knee braces underneath.
That's right. Yep.
Yeah.
I just feel like you're the godfather in this moment. Like, they massacred my boy, kind of out there. So hot start with RVD, not surprised by that whatsoever, because that's just how he works. So and kind of doing this. So so we talked a little bit about I'll start us off with, where would you rank not the pay-per-view Elimination Chamber, but
hold on real quick. Sorry. So Triple H just got backdrop onto the flooring. I remember hearing that this first one, they made that way too stiff. So pay attention throughout the match at that, the grating or whatever it is. It is like rock hard steel. And the problem is it doesn't look like that impressive of a bump, but it's horrible for these guys. So it's like the worst, right? Like, you want it to look like it hurts, but it not hurt. Well, this is the opposite. It doesn't look like it hurts that much, but it apparently hurt them like hell throughout the match. So
the chamber's got some give, but yeah, that backdrop did not have much.
Yeah.
Give,
so pay attention to that.
And it just broke the door. So where would you rank this on your kind of enclosed matches of, like, would you put this, Hell in the Cell, it just War Games? Like, what do you prefer to see? What do you want them to give us?
Well, so it's tough because, most people are going to say, well, the Hell in the Cell, geez, Triple H already with a blade job. This is back when just guys bled all the time in main events. It's funny how no one ever bleeds earlier in the show, but then the main event, I guess they just hit each other harder.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
So, okay, here's the deal. Hell in a Cell has more great matches and more memorable moments than the Elimination Chamber. There's no doubt about that. I prefer the Elimination Chamber. I dig this whole thing with like six guys. Anybody can be champion. There's still a lot of creative spots that you can do with this cage. Still no one has gone outside, but I don't know how you'd really do it with the way that the top is shaped. But, you know, again, I kind of prefer this. I think it's a really cool setting. Again, better matches have occurred than Hell in the Cell, but as far as the structure goes, I like this a lot. What about you?
I think we're getting to the point where these matches have definitely gotten much better over time. And as I was just going to reference, like you see more of like these people climbing up to the top of the cages or top of the pods, which is exactly what Rob Van Dam is doing right now. I think that, pulling him through it, that's new. Because the tops are solid now. It's just that graded material where in this one. Chain fence. Yeah. So, but yeah, I think that it's gotten better, but I think it's at that point too where you're like, you expect to see that spot. Like, you know that someone's going to climb on top of the pod. You know that somebody's going to go through a pod at some point. Like, you know, and so I think you do got to find some ways now. But at the same time, yeah, I think depending on who you have in the match, and you're right, that looked rough. You're right. This is six Hall of Famers in the ring right now. Like, and so if you put the right people in there, you could really have some magic in this type of match.
Well, there's sometimes where, you know, there's a couple guys that kind of water it down a little bit. And I'm not saying that you thought all of them had a chance to win, but I mean, there's six really solid guys in there right now. Man, that was a bad spot.
And I think too, to their credit, the women have put on some good ones too. They haven't had the opportunity to do a lot of them, but.
Well, how about how about that one like a year or two ago with the tag teams?
Yeah, exactly.
Remember how good that was?
Yeah, and so they've got some opportunities to really put on some good stuff here. And so again, you've got Triple H and RVD still the only ones in the match here. I think that they've probably sped this up a little bit more. I think people are obviously coming in. I am curious. So here we go. Yep. All right. So
there's the countdown clock. It had to be 5 minutes right here.
Don't keep the time. So, and you and I do not know the order here. I have not looked up the order ahead of time, so I don't know who's coming in next.
No,
but I was curious about how they did this from a camera perspective. So they've got spotlights shining down on the different pods.
Chris Jericho
is the next one in the ring, getting laid out right away by Rob Van Dam. Because now you've got that like top down, which I think that's a cool perspective. Like,
that's right.
It makes me think of like XFL and the flyover cam and stuff like that. And they do have, you know, some good ideas and things like that happen, but just the spotlights and kind of, you know, what's happening there. So these three guys going at it now. Yeah.
Have you seen one of these live?
Not an Elimination Chamber. I have seen a cage match live, and it's forever, but I've not seen Elimination Chamber live.
Yeah, me neither. They had it one. There was one in Phoenix a few years ago. I did not go, but I thought it'd be kind of cool to go. Just wasn't a good card and just didn't feel like it.
Well, and I think it's just one of those where, so I'm actually looking right now. So there have been, in total 26 Elimination Chamber matches.
Really?
Yes.
I would have, if you asked me guess, I probably would have said 12. I'm wrong, but like 26. I know some years there's like two on the pay-per-view, but that's crazy.
And they have been all contained. So 2009 was the last time that was before Elimination Chamber was a thing. It was actually No Way Out. And you had actually two of them on that night. Yep. And so, and ever since then, it's been mostly two. It's about 50-50, two on a card versus one. So yeah, I'm surprised by that too. I'm not gonna lie. And so, and the last one would have been March, just before the world went to shit, March 8th. Yep, and that was the Elimination Chamber pay per view.
So according to WWE.com, do you know what the top Elimination Chamber match ever is?
According to what? Like
WWE.com, they ranked top Elimination Chamber matches ever.
I'm looking at the list right now, and if I had to guess, maybe it was, I'm gonna just say 2017. You had a Bray Wyatt winning that one. And it's that was actually in Phoenix. Yeah.
It's actually the one we're watching right now.
Is it really?
Yeah.
First one. Holy shit.
Well, arguably the best Hell in a Cell match ever was the first one too. Interesting. Isn't that crazy?
Yep. I'm surprised. I'll be honest. Like I get it, but okay.
Yeah, they have this one number one. Number two is the one they did. I want to say, yeah, it was the one after this one, which was it was at SummerSlam 2003. That was Triple H, Shawn Michaels, Chris Jericho, Randy Orton, Goldberg, and Kevin Nash.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. And you and I both providing the stats and giving our fans a little bit more here. So I have Triple H has the most victories with 4. And Chris Jericho has been involved in the most of them with 8.
Wow.
Right. And so you figure like that, you know, you figure a third of these, he's been in them. Like that's crazy. A little bit less than that, but they kind of doing that. So both guys now working over RVD. Oh, just taking the spot or taking the hard shots there. So, but yeah, I think this is just one of those gimmicks that, like, it does work. And maybe it is because we don't see it that often. You asked about seeing it live. I think that is one we hear it all the time that it's tough live because of you can't see shit.
Yeah. I mean, you'd have to have great. You'd have to be like near the cameras. I mean, that's the only time you'd really be able to enjoy it is if you were like directly facing the camera.
Yeah, if you're up in the nosebleeds, you're not getting a show.
Like, you can't see anything.
You've got to watch it on the monitors, and even then, a lot of times it's tough to see the monitors. So, yeah.
Well, let me ask you this: so they do it before WrestleMania every year.
Yeah.
Do you like the fact that it's an opportunity for someone to if whoever wins gets a title shot at WrestleMania, kind of like the brand that doesn't get the Royal Rumble winner?
Yeah, I wish that there was more of that, and I think we've talked about it not too long ago, how like Wrestle Kingdom, we know who's getting the main event in New Japan in January already. Like we knew a month ago after the, and so I wish that there was more of that, of coming out of, you know, it puts some stakes to it, and not like, you know, like not like terrible, like when baseball, like the winner of the All-Star game got home field advantage or whatever the shit that was. Like, let's put something to it. Like, you know, make it matter.
Well, that's what I like. Like, you know, Money in the Bank, and it's kind of run its course, but like Money in the Bank, at least there's something at stake. It's a briefcase. It's a title shot. You know, King of the Ring, you should do that every year, but instead of some idiot heel wearing a crown for a year, why don't you actually have a title shot available? Like a world title shot, whoever wins King of the Ring, and really load up that field with some you know, top talent.
And Booker getting a big pop. I can see fans up on, oh, look at all cameras and everything. Booker's our next competitor on this one. So, yeah, I'm with you, absolutely. And I think, too, like this was the first year in a long time where we, like, the Miz has the briefcase, at least as of us recording, after taking it off of Otis. And so I think doing like more with that, like that adds a stakes of like, you know, it sucks for Otis because they had nothing to do, you know, they didn't know what they were doing with it, but, you know, to kind of move the title that way and kind of have that. And so I think that's just one of the, where, yeah, like why, you know, you and I were so used to the Andre the Giant Battle Royal Memorial is going to be on the pre-show every year. And you know that like whoever wins it is going to get a trophy and then you're never going to hear about it as soon as that WrestleMania is over. Like, but that should be a bigger deal. Like that could be an opportunity to start a push for somebody, you know, that's it, coming out of WrestleMania and kind of pushing that angle. But they, you know, maybe they get a month on TV with the trophy and that's it, you know? So I don't know.
So interestingly enough, because we were talking about, you know, the shows that did not have a Royal Rumble match, or I'm sorry, a Survivor Series match. So this is the second one that does not have Survivor Series match. So I was just curious what they did the year before. So 2001 was a pretty good show. It was the blow off to the Alliance versus WWF feud. So everything was basically, it was like it all came down to a winner take all, where the WWF versus the Alliance.
Yep. And okay. Yep. I'm with you.
So I mean, there was some really good matches on there. Like there's a Dudley's defeating the Hardys steel cage unification match. There was a a little six pack challenge for the women, and then the main event was really interesting. It came down to Austin and Rock, and it was a 45-minute match.
And for spoiler for everybody.
Oh boy.
So Rob Van Dam on top. Yep.
Wow, he's all the way up there.
And he's the only one that has to this point kind of utilized, I say, kind of doing crazy shit.
Oh, wasn't the prettiest one, but he hit it.
No, that was not pretty. Well, and spoilers, we're going to talk about the 2003 Survivor Series next week for those of you listening. That was Team Bischoff and Team Austin, so we've got that one lined up to talk about that.
Which,
one
by the way, that was a really good show. I mean, there's a lot going on in that show.
Yeah, and so we had a lot, so there was an ambulance match. There was a couple Survivor Series, matches there. And so, yeah, we got a little bit more with that one. We had a buried alive match. And so, yeah, a lot happened on that one. But that's for next week. And so, yeah, but I'm with you because I was curious, too, of just kind of like what was the ebb and flow to this? Like, how good were some of these Survivor Series? And like I said,
RVD is out.
RVD's, yep. I stand by my point of when you're looking at the big four, and even like you look at like the monthly shows that we're getting now, like Survivor Series just lost a lot of its luster. Like it's just not what it used to be in a lot of ways. Because we'll see, because coming up here, associating with the Undertaker and how that's going to play out this year. And
I mean, it was smart to do that because otherwise, what are you looking forward to on this card?
Yeah, right.
And that's the problem too. You talk about stakes. What's the point of Survivor Series now? It's just a bunch of exhibition matches. And I don't mean to sound like a mark, but it's like, there's nothing at stake, right? Like, yeah, it's not like, oh, well, this is for a world title. This is for a world title. There are no stakes. It's literally just, hey, we're going to put these two people together in. If you're trying to sell the pay-per-view, you're like, oh, they're dream matches, but who gives a shit? Like,
whatever. Well, and this year they're taking the approach of, they have the Survivor Series matches, they're doing the champ versus champ, which, like, they've got currently four matches on the card as of us recording this that are champ versus champ. So, yeah, U.S.
So
champ.
What? So that's just an exhibition.
Well, and why aren't you doing that at like Clash of Champions? That's literally the point of that pay-per-view, is it's all the champs, like all the belts are defended, So why they're doing it here, and we don't know who's on if the full teams and what they're going to look like, but they're at least like doing a little bit more. But again, and I don't understand why. And so here comes Kane. So leaving Michaels as the last one in his pod.
Dude, and I forgot how Jack Kane was at this point.
He looks, look at him. He's
a big dude, and he's rock solid. 18 years ago,
and everything's pointing to no NXT at this year's Survivor Series, unless something has changed.
I can confirm that is the case. They are not. Vince does not see them on the same level and doesn't want to commingle it.
It just, you almost feel bad for some of them, like their call-ups, and you and I got to meet some of them, a few years ago now at this point, and like, I wouldn't want to get called up. Like, there's some of that. And so, and this is a good segue. I know recently too, you and I had the opportunity. We looked over the third quarter stats came out. Let's talk about this. Let's bring it up. And so,
okay.
And it was not their most profitable quarter ever. Not the most profitable quarter of the year. It was and that's through the pod. There you go. The first fans time. Popping for that. Yep. First time going through the pod. Yeah. It was their most profitable quarter ever in the history of WWE. So during the pandemic, they've made more money, like, just surviving through that and like kind of what they're doing, proving that he doesn't need to build a superstar.
They're a TV company, and they're getting big TV rights. Here's what I'm curious about, and I haven't seen I haven't gotten a straight answer on this yet. Are Fox and USA happy with the ratings?
Well, you and I probably read some of the same rumors. I've read that they're not happy, but they're also not like you know, Vince being Vince is, oh, they'll get better. Like, you know, or hey, it's what's happening. I know he blamed it on Roman being out for a while too there. Like there's always a good excuse for not the best chokeslam there from Kane. Booker not getting up either. I'm with you. I think that it's just one of those where I don't think they care. Like, because you got a weekly show and content and you are driving people to watch.
I mean, think about Fox. That's 104 hours of programming. All right, so Booker is out.
Yep.
104 hours of programming.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like you think about that and you're like, okay, well, what would be in WWE's spot? Well, it's a Friday night. So is it two dramas? Is it four sitcoms? Okay, well, how much does it cost to produce four sitcoms? Oh, and by the way, like they're only doing 20-some episodes. They're not doing them all year. So it's a pretty sexy piece of content to have. So my guess is we wish they were higher, but it's solid for what it is. Because again, it's 2 hours, 52 weeks, and you know, there's value to it. And you know, everything's down right now. NBA was down, baseball was down. I mean, everything's down. So I think they have some cover there. And it works for them.
And I find it extremely interesting because, and we've talked about this before. Oof, big slam there. And Jericho's been bleeding quite a bit now at this point too. That it's like, so they've had zero live show revenue and it's still their biggest quarter ever. And so,
remember, there's no Saudi money because they haven't been over there.
And so I think you have to, for me at least, I have to ask the question of, okay, when do you stop doing live shows? Not for the revenue piece of it, but like just for the fucking wrestlers' like health. Like, and it's weird because they'll run a live show on a Monday with SmackDown crew during like Monday, like on a Monday. Like, why are you're literally counter programming against yourself in some little shit Midwest town to make what, you know, $100,000, $150,000?
It's terribly antiquated from a business standpoint, right? Because it used to be, remember that, you know, 30 years ago, everything was built around the live event business. That's how they made money. And then, they started to make some money on pay-per-view. But they were a live event business. Mm-hmm. That being said, all these years later, does it still make sense? I don't see anything that suggests it. The only argument I think you can really make for the house shows is it's an opportunity for Jimmy in Wichita to see his favorite superstars live.
Yeah.
In person. Okay. Yeah,
I get that.
And because the WWE comes to town, it is good for, you know, it drives TV viewership because they get to see people. I think the world's a lot smaller now because of the internet and YouTube and the network and social media. So I just don't think it matters anymore. I'm not positive, but I'm pretty confident, right?
And we're going to talk in a couple weeks here about the Saturday night main event. And there's some history there that I didn't know about that I think you're going to find interesting of like, when they did them and how they'd pop ratings and all that. And so I think there's something to be said for that and kind of going back into the coffers of, do we do a show like that? Is Michael's already bleeding after one move?
I don't think so.
I thought I saw it, but anyway, so yeah, but I think that's one where, and we see it a lot of like you and I have done those NXT shows that are, I mean, we were literally in the basement of like, a concert hall, like, when we went and saw that one show and there was like, the three rooms make up the building and things like that. And so, but we were, in this tiny, and you see the kind of dirt sheets a lot of times, like, the X is getting thrown up because wrestlers are getting hurt during those and shit happens. I get that. But yeah, like how much more are you exposing your wrestlers to getting hurt in situations like that with all these different live shows? But there's somebody who said we're staying fresh too.
Fresh. And then you get better and you're working in front of live crowds and,
yeah, how do you not get better if you're not in front of that atmosphere? It's not like you and me going into the office. Their office is a whole lot different. They need to do that. So
yeah,
a lot of choke slams coming here from Kane at this point. That one.
But there's probably to close the loop on this. There's probably a cadence that makes sense. Hey,
yes.
Raw is live in front of an audience. SmackDown is live in front of an audience. Every 4 weeks, our pay per views are live. Wednesday NXT is live, and then each of those brands does one other show. So Raw does a Sunday house show or pay-per-view, and Monday Raw. SmackDown does a Thursday or a Saturday show in addition, right? So it's like you're working twice a week. You know, you're working twice a week for the year. So you might work 100. There you go. Then here's your 100 matches. And then maybe we try to give guys a month or two off throughout the year.
Well, and I think too, like you do, like, because the Halloween Havoc, a couple weeks, like, popped a huge number. I don't know if you saw that one, but like, you know, their ratings increased like 25%. And so a lot of finishers now happen in Canadian. You have the Sweet Chin with the Pedigree, and then Jericho just got the Lion Salt pin.
So we down to three now?
Yeah, just the three of them.
Jericho, yep. Triple H, and Shawn Michaels. Well, yep. So you said Halloween Havoc ratings were way up. So, which says to me, okay, we need to put all of our effort into creating interesting, compelling television each week that people need to tune into.
Mm-hmm.
And yep. I understand every week can't be Halloween Havoc, but hey, you know, there's the Raw that's the Slammy Awards. There's the Raw that's the King of the Ring, the Raw and SmackDown that are. There's a draft or two each year. I mean, you just got to figure out ways that it's not phoning it in, you know, and then, I mean, it feels like the pattern we're in is, hey, we're going to phone it in for most of the year. It gets interesting in January because it's WrestleMania season. You might stick around a little bit longer. Yeah, maybe they hold you to SummerSlam. There's not a whole hell of a lot. I mean, that's just what it feels like. And I don't think I'm alone in saying that. I mean, the only time I really give a shit about the current product is WrestleMania season. So call it January, February, March. And by mid-April, I'm out again.
So are you, and this has got a two-part to this one. Are you in favor of then an off season, or is there a better alternative that kind of has like a rotation?
No, I'm not. I don't care about an off season. And the reality is that they, you know, they're getting paid for the fact that they have live programming every single week. So yeah. I don't think you need that. What I think you need to do is just trying to get him to bleed. So punching him in the face
right there. Yeah. You can see him doing the blade job. That's just bad. Yeah. But yeah.
So, but I think guys need to come and go off of TV.
Yeah, I agree.
That's all.
You're seeing the same people. And
here's a perfect example. Orton's been doing that for what? 5 years now. Go away. Sometimes he comes back, he goes away. Not like Lesnar goes away, but just like he might be gone for 2 or 3 months. So hey, you don't have a program for 3 months, then you come back and you do. What's wrong with that?
And I don't know. I hear always mixed reports, but like they do have to show up every week, whether they're on.
Oh TV. Yeah, they have a ton of people that show up that aren't on TV. I mean, though, you know, there'd be a Raw where there's 40 people backstage, you know, and 10 of them aren't on television.
Right.
But it wasn't a big deal when they were doing a house show loop. Because, you know, they were working three house shows. They just weren't on Raw.
And you would see a lot of them at house shows. Like, that was the thing. I remember I did a Christmas one or something like that at one point for a WWE. And the same thing, like, it was people that we weren't seeing every week, not getting the pushes, that were doing the house show. So I think that like you said, it's to keep them, you know, keep the ring rust off and kind of do that. I question it because you don't hear a ton of them say like, yeah, they say the road schedule's tough and things like that, but you know, one way or the other, and I get why they wouldn't take a definitive stance, but you just don't hear it very often either.
So Jericho's still in there. We know that at WrestleMania, we're going to get Jericho and Shawn Michaels. So even planting the seeds for this feud there, and they'd continue at the Royal Rumble, and God, Shawn's just gushing blood.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Triple H just standing around. I don't know what he's up to, but yeah.
I'll tell you, one of the more underrated feuds, and it went on for years, but Shawn and Triple H, it's one of those feuds that, you know, I don't think people talk about a ton.
Yeah.
To me, it's one of the, I don't know, we'd have to make a list, but one of the, maybe the top 10 feuds ever. You know, if you said, hey, Hogan Savage was a great one. NWO WCW was a great one. You know, and you go down the list of like some of the awesome ones that have taken place. I think it's in the top 10. They had some just killer matches and it always made sense. I loved it.
Yeah, and this is one, and I think you're right, and that's when we can almost dedicate like a show, you know, a special show 1 week of just like some of these. I say like the not reported enough stories, you know, that we forget about, like how long, and like, you know, there might be an ebb and flow to it of like, you know, pockets of a story for 6 months, but like that you've got two wrestlers that have literally been like, you know, putting on great matches for 15 years, you know, or 10 years or however long it is. And you forget that like they kind of have some of that stuff. And like, you know, Rey Mysterio's had a long run lately. Like, you know, I think of him and like, you know, kind of what he's doing and kind of being back in there and just, yeah, all kinds of stuff. So you got Jericho again. There's the lion salt going after Michaels.
That's got to be it.
Two. Nope. We said at the start, I almost feel like the grating on the outside of the ring, it's like that like steel grating. And that's what it looks like the sidewalk steel grating vents. Like that looks like what they use. Like,
well, it had to be strong enough to, you know, hold people. So, I mean, it's built rock solid. I mean, I think they cover it now. They don't do it like that anymore. They didn't after this show, I don't think.
I thought it would. Yeah. Now I think it's like more of like the wooden kind of extension. Yeah. So it's probably built more like a ring with the wood and things like that underneath the kind of the padding. Michael's going for the pin there. So yeah, I got, you know, kind of talking about the kind of best quarter ever. Like, are you, you know, taking the TV deals into account, are you surprised that would, like, they made that much money?
No, because the TV deals are just so astronomical now. I mean, it's like that for everything. I mean, you see like the latest NFL TV deal. I mean, even in baseball, you know, you wonder, well, how are they paying, you know, the Dodgers, their payroll is $200 million. Well, they're making hundreds of millions of dollars just in their local TV deal.
Yeah.
And why are baseball teams, you think, oh, baseball's dead. Well, why is baseball have such a high, well, because think of the inventory. Okay. So your local baseball team, your Pittsburgh Pirates, you know, hey, there's a decent amount of people that tune in. They're tuning into 162 games a year. And even if their local TV package is like 125 games or something, right? What's 125 times what? 4 hours? That's 408. Yeah. I mean, it's 500 hours of live programming. Okay. So 500 hours is a lot of content. Number one. Number two is it's live. So if you're watching a baseball game, you're not fast forwarding through commercials. So those commercials are more valuable because it's live and people are watching. WWE kind of catches like that same trend where, hey, a lot of people watch SmackDown live because they want to tweet about it, and we have a hell of a lot of programming throughout the year.
Yeah, it makes sense. And you figure all the cross promotion they're getting, because like literally during the World Series, they're talking about SmackDown on Fox, like, you know, and kind of and doing that and kind of having those opportunities for some of these people that kind of, you know, make that money. And so, and that's
so,
like,
so, so yeah. So my point is, I'm not surprised.
Yeah,
I feel like Jericho is going to take a sweet chin music here.
So you got the lion tamer. Triple H is locked in. Oh, called it. There it is. And a huge super kick to Jericho, and Michaels gets him 1, 2, 3. There you go. So you got Michaels and Triple H is left, and that's it.
And as it should be, because these guys squared off at SummerSlam and Shawn Michaels' return match. So and how appropriate that it comes down to the two of them.
We got a half a crimson mask.
They're
too,
both bleeding. They're both dragging. This is great. So, but no, what I was going to say is, yeah, the profitability doesn't surprise me just because these TV deals are just so damn lucrative. But if I'm the WWE, my focus is how do we make our TV product must see? That's it. That's the only concern I'd have. How do we make our product must? How do we get more eyeballs? Why are guys like you and I, why should we wake up on a Tuesday morning and at least fast forward through it? Because I'm not even doing that right now because I just don't even care.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And that's, and why is it? And I don't know. And you and I know we're going to armchair it for a second here. Like, I don't know what the fix is. Like, we complain about it too. And you and I talk about it, but I don't know what the fix is to bring more people in.
I mean, you tuned in every Monday to see what Steve Austin did. There's no one you're tuning in to see what they do now. That's the issue. And here's the big mistake. Oh, here's where I think the big mistake, and this is probably fed by Dave Meltzer and bought into by too many people on the internet, that people care about the match quality. I'm not saying that we don't love a great match on a big stage, but what I'm saying is, okay, if every match on AEW on Wednesday or NXT is five-star, incredible, great, so what? Who cares?
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. What I care about is the characters. I care about, hey, it's the blow off to this killer storyline. And, you know, you're actually invested in those two characters. But, you know, the idea of great matches just aren't that important to TV ratings. And, oh, geez.
You got Michael catapulted one of the pods.
Through the
yep.
pod.
The wow. slingshot. Yep.
So, you know what I'm saying is that, so you say, oh, well, how do you get people to watch? Oh, well, the quality of wrestling. That's not why, okay? Why were those Saturday night main events just popping off for massive ratings back in the 80s on NBC? It wasn't because of five-star matches. It was because you got to see Hulk Hogan and the Ultimate Warrior and Randy Savage and the Legion of Doom, right? That's what people wanted to see. Mm-hmm. It was these larger-than-life characters. So they got to get back to larger-than-life characters that you actually care what happens. Like during that Edge-Randy Orton feud, I actually tuned in because I cared. AJ Styles and Undertaker, I cared. You know, like, I know I'm naming old-timers, but they're characters I care about. I don't care about that. You could make me care about Roman Reigns if the Heyman thing works and this tribal chief thing kind of takes off and they do the right thing with it. I care about Brock Lesnar. So give me people that I care about and they can turn it around. But until they have characters that you care about, doing things that you need to tune in to see, match quality doesn't matter.
Yeah. And see, and I will admit I disagree a little bit. I think that there's almost the counter programming to it, where I think WWE should be doing more of this story driven, like, kind of character building. And I think, and you and I work in an environment, our shoot jobs, with like finding your niche and what is the product you're selling. I think that they could should be their product, and AEW can be that counter programming of their niche could be that five-star stuff. So if you want to see that, because I enjoy some of that sometimes too, of just seeing like two good wrestlers, not a spot fest, but an actual like good wrestling match. And even they're trying to like repackage Kenny Omega right now to kind of be a little bit more of that and go back to some of that from his, like, when he was in New Japan a lot more. But yeah, and that's when you want the kind of the drama and the soap opera of wrestling and like the stories and kind of what they're telling. Yeah. I think like WWE, that should be, they're like, we agree on that. That should be their full focus. But I do think there's the flip market is there as well.
These guys are just ripping it up. This is great. I'm telling you, the matches they had, we need to cover one in December. We should cover that three stages of hell match they had. I think that was the match they had after this one, if I'm not mistaken.
I will be talking about that in the aftermath. Yep.
Yeah. Let's maybe cover that one if you can slot it in.
I got that. Oh, yep. I got that one to talk about a little bit right now or afterwards. Yep. And so again, go for the pedigree on the outside right now. Yep.
No, don't do it. Don't do it. Oh.
And so something we have not talked about in this match, Triple H was actually hurt early on. That's one that to kind of spoil a little bit here, that he actually hurt his neck earlier in this one. He was, spoiler for the aftermath, he was taken to the hospital after. So he's actually been wrestling most of this match with what it was ended up being diagnosed as like a swollen, like, throat/neck from how he took one of the moves. And so he's been going, now almost like 20, 30 minutes, wrestling really like seriously hurt. They ended up kind of keeping him overnight and everything. It told him like he shouldn't even wrestle the next night or kind of appear the next night. But of course he's not going to, can't tell him no type thing. But yeah, so you got Michaels now on top of one of the pods. And this is one. Yeah. Again. And so I think part of this is them learning the match. Cause we did not big elbow right off the top.
Oh, great elbow.
I say they're not utilizing the chamber as much as I would have expected. You know, there's just not a lot of spots. It's the just solely the gimmick of the chamber's enough this year because it was the first time. Yep.
That was a great elbow drop. I mean, these guys, this is just a war. You know, this match is just, I mean, it hasn't, it's just been nonstop, man.
Yeah, and both guys, Michael's still bleeding like crazy. He's got the AJ Styles mom haircut as well too. He actually looks like AJ from behind right there. It's kind of funny. Tuning up the band. Here we go. Earl Hebner in the way. Come on, buddy. We haven't had a ref bump in a few weeks now. We're due. I don't know. I don't think it's coming this time, but we're definitely due. So yeah, tuning up the band. Triple H trying to get up to his feet, blocks it. Yep. And taking the pedigree. There you go. But too tired to pin. Didn't see that coming. There you go.
Yeah, I mean, this is a great match.
So these two guys, so you, obviously you got these two guys, Generation X, all the stuff they've done together over the years. I think that you would obviously pick Triple H, or excuse me, HBK over Triple H in this scenario. We just talked about like kind of character development. Who's had the better character over the 20, 30 years that they've been wrestling?
Wow. Kicked out of the pedigree. Better character.
Like, I know you like Triple H, or excuse me, I keep saying it, HBK more. I know he's your guy, but take it from a solely character perspective, are you still in Triple H? Or wow,
no,
HBK.
I'm just pro Shawn Michaels on everything.
I got you. Okay.
Go for another pedigree.
But reversed on this one. Ooh, and real quick, right into the sweet chin. Oh, he got all of it too. One, two, three. There it is. My crowd's going ape shit.
And Howard Finkel on the call.
And they're going nuts right now.
Absolutely nuts. That's one of the things I remember from this match is they went crazy.
And there's the fabled big gold belt draped over Michaels. There you go. And confetti. Look at it. It's a party. Survivor Series.
Wow. JR going JR's nuts. Call.
Yep, going nuts. Yep.
Do you believe in miracles?
Stealing Neil Michaels' call. There you go. Okay.
Wow. Well, you and I will leave this on the background, but let's get into the aftermath.
Ho! It's time for the aftermath.
All right. Initial thoughts.
It definitely got cooking once you were down to Shawn Michaels and Triple H only.
That's fair.
Like, it was fine, I think, in that lead up to it, but I don't think the match really got like good until you had just the two of them in the match. And they had just as long a match between the two of them as they did when all six were in there. And Triple H wrestled that whole match.
Yeah.
So, you know, Michaels came in probably after about 15 minutes or so. And so, yeah, somebody said, you know, Triple H, you know, like, I get like, you know, people for a while there were shitting on him because of his WrestleMania matches and, you know, he was getting wedged in. But like, he put on it, you know, he always having some of the longest matches too, but it speaks to what he can do too. So, yeah, I thought it was good. How about you?
Really good. I think that if the increments were 5 minutes, they could have been 3 minutes in between the pods. But I still thought it was pretty good. And then, I mean, you know how I feel about the end. Awesome. Just absolutely awesome. You could tell it meant something to him. But man, and I know you'll get into this in the aftermath, but I just wish he would have had a longer reign or another reign. That was the last time he ever got the gold.
Yeah. And so crazy. So
So yeah, what like happens?
Said, yeah, like you said, of course, it was actually the kind of or couple nights later, you had Michaels defending the title against RVD, so kind of carrying that on a little bit, but also Triple H and Michaels having their continued as well too. And so you ended up, and of course, Michaels actually won that following night. It was a DQ finish because Triple H attacked Rob Van Dam. So that piece of it never really stopped at that point. So again, though, but then you had Rob Van Dam facing Triple H. Just again, a lot of back and forth. Michaels was a special referee of that one. It was going to be determining the number one contender match at Armageddon, which was the following pay-per-view, is actually Michaels and Triple H coming out of that. And so, like you said, that led into the three stages of hell match. The first match, this was Armageddon of that 2002. The first match, it was a street fight, which Triple H actually won that round. You had the steel cage match was the second stage of hell, which Michaels won that one. And then the third and final stage was actually a ladder match. Which
if I'm not mistaken, that was like a 50-minute long match. It was crazy long.
I don't know. But yeah, that was one that just kind of doing that. And so
a Hell in a Cell match too at some point.
I don't remember, but yeah.
This thing went on for like 3 years. There's a great special on the WWE Network about it. Some of the stuff I just didn't remember.
Yeah, so you got that, but then you actually, so kind of the rest of the participants in this one, I was kind of curious just kind of what happened and, you know, trying to, you know, like you said, complete the circle on some of this. So Kane actually ended up making a tag team with Rob Van Dam, and the two of them ended up winning the tag titles, actually. And so they ended up losing the titles to La Resistance, and then
La Resistance.
And so Triple H then offering Kane a spot in Evolution at this point. You had, so there was a Triple H Kane, kind of Austin was involved in that one too, and kind of since he was at the time co-general manager of Raw, that it ended up actually like that next year, kind of that summer, it actually led to Kane's removal of his mask. And so a big storyline, you know, that was, you know, such a big deal when it happened. And then you actually had Booker T and Goldust actually taking on Chris Jericho and Christian for the tag titles. That was at No Mercy. That would have been 2002. So again, so some of the competitors in this one, you know, continuing to have matches against each other, and is actually ended up losing the match. And so it just kind of interesting. So Booker T and Goldust actually tagging for a little while. They held the belts for really less than a month when they did win them. They actually lost them to William Regal and Lance Storm. And so they had just kind of went their separate ways at that point. So kind of trying to figure out what would stick and things like that. So yeah, just kind of interesting though, but you know, not a ton of storyline, but you kept getting, you know, obviously I think the biggest piece coming out of this is we could clearly see was the Triple H and Shawn Michaels stuff. So thoughts on that? You ready for reviews?
Hit us with the reviews and then let's get our payoff scores.
So let's start with the Pro Wrestling Torch. This was a good, from Wade himself, a good final few minutes, good match overall, but not in the must-see category. Michaels didn't look like anything special in the match, so unless you were aware of his rep, his win wouldn't mean a lot. He gave it 3.5 stars. And so we got different takes on this match. And so it was interesting too, how they wrote these up versus what we get now. And so the chamber match was a big disappointment, although a very good match at the same time. It was a good gimmick brawl, but it got by in part because of the novelty of not having seen the gimmick match before. In the end, the chamber didn't do much for me. The roof was so high that it wasn't part of the match, unlike Hell in a Cell or War Games, where the cage roof factored in some way. The breaking glass in the corners was novel to a point, but we've seen it before on entrance sets where wrestlers crash through glass, including Shane McMahon and Kurt Angle, in a more dramatic fashion. So that was actually from Wade. That was his, Wade Keller, his thoughts on that match at the time. One of the collaborators wrote, but then kind of even them differing on their own kind of, you know, the roundup. The Elimination Chamber match was fun for a one-night event only, but I don't think viewers are going to be anticipating the next Chamber match like they would a Royal Rumble or Hell in a Cell. Rob Van Dam seemed to be the only wrestler in the match who was looking to use the new surroundings in an innovative manner. Chris Jericho delivered a very good performance, but nothing else about the match was extraordinary. Shawn Michaels winning the WWE title is 2 months too late. Even worse, none of the actual full-time wrestlers...
What do you mean 2 months too late?
That's what it says.
It's like, his first match back. It's SummerSlam. He comes back. Triple H gets his heat back by attacking him after a classic match. That's the end of August, okay? So then you have September, you have October, and then you have November. So 90 days later, he comes back, big surprise, last man in the match, and then guess what? He wins the title in Madison Square Garden, and they go fucking crazy. So tell me when it should have happened. It should have happened on the October pay-per-view, the September pay-per-view. You know, and this is the same asshole that will say, well, they just hot shot everything. They never build anything. Everything happens too quickly. There's no long-term planning there. What an asshole.
So, and then lastly, it said, oddly enough, the order of elimination was a probably a good example of how Vince McMahon would rate his top Ross wrestlers. And so, which I would agree on that one. So that was the kind of take on that one. And so, and that was Wade and then one of the collaborators. And so, then you get into what Meltzer had to say in this one. And so the show ended with a confetti celebration for Michaels' comeback, getting the title in his second WWE match back after more than 4 years on the sidelines in a debut of the Brutal Elimination Chamber. Michaels, 37, just a few months shy of 5 years from when he was last a regular wrestler, pinned Triple H after a super kick to win the title. But while it was entertaining on the night, the booking decisions reeked of short-sighted problems that have put the company in a hole it's in. Among things noted were the cost of the structure, nearly as much as WWE spends on its entire developmental program in a year. I'm always bitching about the cost, like it matters. At a time when the company is making so many cutbacks, some viewed it as a WCW-like special effects bondoggle. Where money is poured down the drain, building something that isn't worth all that much because of the feeling fans want special effects rather than wrestling. There is always going to be an internal
timeout.
Go ahead.
So they wasted way too much money on the structure. So if they do the same thing over and over again, oh, the product's stale. Oh, they never try anything new. Oh, they take their fans for granted. Oh, the Survivor Series gotten lame. So they spend money, they build a big structure. Oh, how can they be spending all this money when there's cost cuts? Oh, I'm sorry that they cut the 75th through 86th guy on the roster, but then they did a cool structure. Like, you know, what do they think? That they're supposed to just, anyone that wants to be a pro wrestler should be under a WWE contract for their entire life, and they should never downsize. They should never cut the fat on their roster. Give me a break. Okay, now, here's the other interesting thing. Oh, this structure sucked. Oh, this was stupid. Oh, they wasted all this money. Oh, you'll never see this thing again. Well, Jeff, fast forward. Oh, what is it? 18 years.
Here we are.
Okay. Yeah. We have a pay-per-view named after it. Oh, that pay-per-view actually is pretty interesting. Oh, it leads right into WrestleMania. It's produced some really good matches. Where do you watch pay-per-views? Oh, you watch it on this network where they own all their content. They've created enough value in these pay-per-views that a bunch of people pay $10 a month. So now they're making, $20 million a month in revenue off the network. And then they've made all this money off the TV deal. So I'm not saying they're a perfect company. I'm not saying that everything they do is my cup of tea, but it's just so funny how the quote-unquote expert says they spent too much money on this and they're never going to use it again and it sucks and what a dumb idea. And then here we are 18 years later and it's still a really good concept. It's not like, oh, we hate it, it's stupid, it doesn't matter. We still love it. So again, he tries to be columnist with his, you know, hot take opinions and he tries to report the news and I don't think he does either of them well.
Mm-hmm.
Continue.
Okay. Lastly, and so he went on, there's always going to be internal debate regarding product mix. And with McMahon himself residing on the toilet humor and freak show entertainment side, instead of the divergent serious wrestling and realistic angles approach. So real strong visual to end the show. Shawn Michaels' timing as far as when to do spots and how to do them for the most impact is still impeccable. And that's what made the last part of this match so strong. 4.25 stars. So you got 4.25. You got 3.5.
Pretty big discrepancy between the two of them.
Which that's, we don't see that a whole lot. But Tom, no. I'll let you start it off on this one.
You know, the match was good.
It was not great. It was not a classic. It was good. I don't think they used the structure as well as they should have, but who knows when they even knew what the hell this thing was, right? I mean, that being said, Sean and Taker didn't know what the hell in the cell was, and they tore down the house in the five-star match. So the positives are the talent was great. The ending of the match was great. Surprise finish, underdog, guy's been gone for 4 years, wins the title in the Garden, place goes absolutely nuts. So I'm going more moment over match on this one, but my payoff score involves the fact that Sean comes back from the four-year hiatus, second match, wins the title, over Triple H. There's that whole storyline there. Six Hall of Famers in the match. They'd go on to have a great two-year feud. Michaels would tear down the house at WrestleMania. So again, all of those things, not just the, ooh, what spots did they do? All of those things, and especially the moment at the end, I got this at an 8.
Okay.
What an about 8. You?
I'm gonna go a 7. I'm with you. I think that, again, if I was grading it on the entire match itself, I would actually like only give it like a 6. But I think that like the last, because it picked, it picked up on the second half when you just had Michaels and Triple H going at it. And so was it like, you know, like you said, at that point, it wasn't like technical wrestling, but I also wouldn't expect that after Triple H had been in there for 20 minutes already. And so it made sense within the context of it. And this wasn't the one-off, or this wasn't the kind of end to the feud. And so that's why, too, I put it a little lower, I say, because there was still more to do with these guys. But then again, where do you draw the line? Because these guys, like we said during the match, have feuded for years. So it's hard to do that. But I'm going to give it a 7 though, because it was, overall it was pretty good. And now we have the 2020 hindsight to see like the write-ups at the time, like they obviously didn't like the gimmick at all. Like, they didn't see it going anywhere after this, but now we have the ability where, 18 years later to say, well, we've pretty much, gotten, 1.5 elimination chambers every year since.
Well, the thing too is I'm not just saying that because it's 18 years later. I would have said it at the time. Good match, good moment. Great. Let's build on it. That's a really cool structure. Let's see it once a year, once every other year. It gives you, that's the beauty of the six guys, is it gives you a lot of options and a lot of different things happening versus, hey, there's two guys squaring off. And I think its placement right before WrestleMania leads to a really easy way to, from a storyline standpoint, say, okay, who's getting the title shot? Like, that's how Kofi got it.
Yeah,
that's how he got this. And it was a great moment, and it made sense. Hey, this guy outlasted 5 other guys on his brand. We're giving him title shots. So I like it for a lot of reasons, and I think it's really well placed. I actually, in 2020, I prefer what they do with the chamber a lot more than what they do with the Hell in a Cell. The Hell in a Cell, it's just, I don't want to see it 3 times every year.
I think especially to your point about the placement of this, I think it makes a ton of sense. I think that there is like no reason why you can't use this as the kind of jumping point for, or even like the continuation point for a lot of your match, like what you're trying to get your card to look like for WrestleMania. And sadly, I think we know that like so many times, like they don't have the card built by then, so they don't always know what they're doing, which we might know 1 or 2 matches, but a lot of it, that's that last month, is you need that pay-per-view. You need something solid to get you through that final, stretch of being on the road to WrestleMania. Yeah.
Yep. Well, let's get on the road with this show.
Yeah, let's wrap this up. Like I said, overall, this good stuff. We got 8s, we got 7s. Definitely recommend everybody go back, kind of check this one out. We try and say it every week too. Don't forget to find us on social media at Payoff Pod. You're seeing the posts, you're following us, you're checking us out, all that good stuff. And so don't stop dropping messages to us, commenting on all of our posts. We always appreciate that. So, Tom, send us home, my friend.
All right. Well, with a tear in my eye, after a Shawn Michaels epic comeback and his final world title reign, this is Tom and Jeff signing off on another episode of The Payoff.